judge rules arrest and incarceration of James Coates and the seizure of Grace Life Church property were not, I repeat, not a violation of charter rights. Hi, I'm Michael Thiessen, and this is Tim Tyso, and we are here for the Liberty Coalition Canada Liberty Dispatch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. Thanks for joining us on the show again today. We'd love for you to subscribe at YouTube at the Liberty Coalition Canada, as well as to Liberty Dispatch, wherever you get your podcast feeds. And don't forget, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we just rolled out our new supporter platform. We would love for, and we are calling out for about 8,000 Canadians to become monthly sponsors of not only this show, but the many resources that come out of the Liberty Coalition Canada, so that we can make this a permanent institution of freedom, free information, and honest talk about the Canadian landscape. So visit the donate tab at the Liberty Coalition Canada.ca or .com. And thank you very much for those of you who have already done that. We so appreciate it. And we are going to be rolling out scores more of quality programming and content for you. So, Mike, you said we're only talking about one thing today. There's only one topic on the docket. Lay it out for us.
Yeah, so for those of you who have been following the news, you would be aware that a court in Alberta has disregarded the charter freedoms of Pastor James Coates in a trial. I want to kind of give the lay of the land here. So Pastor James Coates had an initial trial representing Grace Life Church back on May 3rd. And that part of the trial was about Pastor Coates' charter rights and freedoms having been violated. And so what happened there was what was put off was this question of rights and freedom. So Pastor James was back in court just recently. And what we're seeing here is that Judge Shigek has basically dismissed this constitutional challenge. And so there's a few things I just want to parse out. First of all, there will be another trial regarding the constitutionality of the health minister's orders. But what has happened before that is a ruling that, in particular, Pastor James, who spent 35 days in jail because his release condition required him to violate his conscience, that's what they've been talking about this week. And the judge decided that no, those 35 days in jail, that the bail requirements were not a violation of his rights. So this isn't the end of it. This isn't the end of the conversation, but this is a part of it. And it just is, I think it's just a horrific decision.
It's unbelievable when you say it like that. He spent 35 days in jail and a judge just ruled that none of his rights were violated. And he did not commit a crime, right?
Right. So look at John Carpe, president of the Justice Center, says this: it's obvious that the government restrictions on people's freedoms to worship, assemble, and associate were violated by health orders that prevent normal, regular church services from taking place. He goes on to say the judge thought the restrictions were reasonable, which is not the proper legal test at this stage. Whether restrictions are reasonable should be considered later, after the government has finally produced medical and scientific evidence to try to justify its restrictions on charter freedoms. You have to remember, that the reason why this case was already set back is because back in May, the government was not willing to produce scientific evidence as to whether or not its own medical orders were justifiable. And so they weren't able to do compelling evidence then. They haven't yet now. So the conversation in court was, well, regarding the health measures or not, was this bail requirement against his constitution?
Right. So yeah, just to clarify that, for you listening, folks, you just need to know the government has not yet produced a scrap of evidence, not one study to justify any of these measures. That goes for all of Canada. There is no study that justifies these measures. We went over this a few weeks ago with our Simon Fraser study. Now, I just want to that's the background. Maybe that's a bit, if you're not as much into that, but we want to lay out some of the big picture consequences of this particular ruling. And the first thing that I want to dive in with is that the Charter of Canadian Rights and Freedoms, the charter so far seems to be a worthless document. Some of you might have a copy of it hanging on your wall. I got a shiny copy of it with a Maclean's magazine issue that I had a few years ago. You can order them for free. It can hang on the wall. We have always held this document very highly as Canadians. We've regarded it as very highly. We've regarded it as globally significant, that it enshrines in our constitution, in our courts, the freedom of the individual for, you know, a number of enumerated freedoms, mobility, speech, expression, assembly, press, those conscience, things like that. This document is the basis for this challenge. Have these rights been violated by arresting a pastor for 35 days, seizing his church property, and giving him bail conditions that require him to violate his own conscience? It seems like a slam dunk case. You read the Constitution or the Charter, then you look at what happened and you say, 2 and 2 equals 4. It looks like a clear violation. And we owe a lot to Sheila Gunn Reid of Rebel News, who compiled a great list of quotes from the judge. And I just want to share one just to lead off here. The judge said, freedom is subject or subordinate to, or underneath, just to parse that out, freedom is underneath or subject to limitations that are necessary to protect public health and morals. So what the judge just did there in a very clear way for us is to say, when it comes to two competing values, when they come head on, one is going to rise to the top as a priority and one is going to be pushed beneath, because if they can't both exist at the same time, something has to give, right? And in that head on collision, in that game of chicken, what the judge is saying is that freedom goes underneath a different value. And what's the value? He said it for us here: to protect public health and morals. So the charter goes beneath, public health and morals goes above. Yes, question, Mike.
Yeah, so again, here you have to see the irony of the situation. So first of all, when we've talked about this before, there is a clause within the charter that allows for emergency measures to be enacted, which would exactly subject rights to health and safety. But the burden of proof lays upon the government to demonstrate that in order to enact the emergency measures, not to presuppose their legitimacy, enact restrictions, and then later to say, oops, actually we had nothing. So the order has already been misplaced. The burden of proof has already been misplaced. And you have a judge now saying that these limitations were reasonable at the same time that the judge has not required this state, the province, to produce medical evidence. So how does a judge say these are reasonable restrictions, right?
Based on what?
Already having the discussion about the medical evidence. So right. It's completely flipped-flopped the priority yeah. of the importance. Rights should be first, and then you have demonstrable evidence that they can be restricted. Not health first, rights second, if we can figure it out.
If we can fit them in. That's a great way of putting it, Mike. The burden of proof, that is something that's so critical here, is that the actual charter does lay the burden of proof at the feet of the government, not at the feet of the individual. It is not up to the citizen to argue for his or her constitutional rights that are within the criminally acceptable behavior, morally acceptable behavior, which for centuries in this country, public worship has been under that category. It is not up to the citizen to defend their rights. It is up to the government to demonstrate why it is temporarily necessary to suspend those. And the government so far has been unable and unwilling to produce that. So that's a problem. And the reason we're laying this out for you, most of you are not pastors. Many of you don't go to church. And so you're wondering, well, I don't care. I'm sick of hearing about the church and their little problems. The reason we're laying this out is because this is how the courts view the Constitution and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which is a document that is supposed to enshrine your rights and freedoms, the things that you hold dear. There's a famous rodeo dude out in Alberta right now who's facing the exact same problems that the church is facing. And so as defending the Constitution, we want to do this for Canadians so that they can protect what is dear to them.
Well, I want to just illustrate that for everybody, right? Everybody needs to understand this. Christians or non-Christians, the church tends to be the canary in the coal mine for government overreach. We all know the canary in the coal mine, right? You send the canary ahead to see if the air is breathable. The canary dies before everybody else dies, then we know there's a problem. The reason why Dr. Joe Boot wrote, along with Aaron and myself, the Niagara 2020 Declaration was to re-help our Canadian friends and the church understand the importance of the freedoms of the church for this very thing. And when we, the church, are overwhelmingly suppressed at the beginning, it's because our moral voices are shouting out early, going, caution, careful, careful, there's overreach here.
Right.
So
yeah, and so I want to go back to something else the judge said here. He said the charter protects a complex of values. So this is just piggybacking on the first quote. It protects a complex of values, right? So does freedom of speech protect you coming onto my driveway and screaming at my children? No, it does not protect that. And we've talked about reasonable limits on free speech. I think there's about six of them that you covered a couple months ago on this show. And the judge calls these complex of values more or less fundamental. Again, you see that qualification where the rights are not fundamental, unqualified. They are more or less fundamental, which means in general, sure, you can go to church. But what that means, that more or less, essentially what it is telling us now is that these only exist in a generation and for a generation who fears the one who grants the rights. The American Constitution and even our charter actually does declare God as supreme. But the American Constitution goes a step further and actually says that these rights are given by God. And therefore, the government is setting up a promise to protect them, not to give them. But when a judge says these rights are more or less fundamental, essentially he's saying they might be, but they're ultimately subject to our definition of, again, morals and health. Now, rights are absolute, whereas health and morals are much more fluid and subjective in the hands of a judge or magistrate. And so it's a lot more unpredictable, and it essentially it poses for us a very uncertain future in Canada as to what's permissible public behavior. And that's why this applies to everybody within or without the church.
Can I, on this point, I want to point out the absurdity of the ruling, because what you see in this situation, again, remember everybody, no burden of proof has been presented by the province of Alberta that the actual orders are constitutional. Now a judge says, well, regardless of that situation, Pastor Coates' freedom of religion was not violated because he could have been released. And this is what the judge says. He could have been released on a single condition. He comply with the law, but it is a very compliance with the law that has not been deemed constitutional because there's no evidence that he could not break his conscience. And again, you got to hear this. You got to feel this. You got to interpret this. What the judge effectively said was this: hey, his liberties were not violated. All he had to do was agree to arbitrary laws. All he had to do was allow my definition of worship stand for his religious convictions. All he had to do was sign a little document and he wouldn't have gone to jail, but he chose to go to jail. So, hey,
yeah,
you're all good. Your liberties are intact. If you want to follow your convictions,
yeah,
you can go to jail for them and you haven't been violated. This is just so egregious and upside down.
Yeah.
The burden of proof is all on the judicial system. It's all on the health unit. And they have completely ignored that in this case.
Yeah. So that leads me perfectly to my second point, Mike. And that is that the courts are essentially, they have become untrustworthy and uninterested in interpreting the law as it is written, or the Constitution or the Charter as it is written, and thus preserve its usefulness. Because essentially the law is only as good as the last case that came before it. And so, and I love that you just brought that out, because the judge said, well, essentially he chose. Another quote that Sheila Gunn Reid captured for us was when the judge said, I accept the sincerity of Mr. Coates' convictions. So the judge didn't go so far as to say, I don't like what he thinks inside his head, because heaven forbid, that would be an overreach. But the thing is that the charter and the criminal code do not protect or take issue with conviction. It does not protect conviction alone. It protects speech, expression, mobility, and assembly. All of these things take place outside of the mind and the heart. These things take place in the real world with our bodies. In fact, the Supreme Court of Canada says in its writings that the freedom of religion is the right to declare religious beliefs openly and without fear of hindrance or reprisal. And catch this, the right to manifest religious belief by worship and practice or by teaching and dissemination. That's from the Supreme Court of Canada. So not only are you allowed to have your religious convictions, you are allowed to act upon them, manifesting those convictions.
Love it. Just a moment in the room. Hand up, professor. Please explain the word manifest.
Great question. So this word actually gets used a lot in New Age religion right now. It means to take something immaterial, to take something imaginary or intangible. There's some synonyms. It's to take something that is sort of just an idea and to bring it out into reality. So to manifest the plans of a house, which are just on paper, it would be to go and build the house with real bricks, real studs, real concrete. So the charter does not just protect your right to think a certain way about God, about people, about laws, about life, family, education, whatever. It does not protect your right to believe those things. It protects your right to manifest them.
Now I've got to go. Because of course, and ironically, this is in our Supreme Court of Canada, our court's language, and our court understands that a religion must be manifest. It must be brought to life. It must be lived out. It must appear into material form. And ironically, you and I have been arguing with pastors all across this country to manifest your beliefs. If you believe it is appropriate to worship the Lord every week as prescribed in Scripture, regularly as prescribed in Scripture, then live it out, because the burden of proof is on the health units and on our government, and they are ignoring their own laws and they're not producing any evidence. And again, even if they were producing evidence, we would still be protected under our charter to manifest. And that doesn't mean that a judge gets to say to a pastor, hey, by the way, I can decide the method that you celebrate your services at. You have to understand the obnoxious posture of this court decision, where the judge declares that the restrictions were reasonable because he redefines the method that the pastor feels convicted to assemble his people. I'm trying to find the exact quote from the JCCF where he talks about this, but you have a judge telling a religious leader, hey, guys, they didn't really violate your rights because we can redefine how you manifest your beliefs.
That's exactly it. So what the Sheila Gunn Reid reported was that he is ruling that by modifying the method of worship, he is not violating, or the courts or the health services are not violating, freedom of religion or expression.
So think about that. What does method include? Does that include asking pastors to submit their sermons to some type of a government accrediting body to make sure that everything's said? We haven't stopped you to preach. We've just changed your method of delivery and what you say. Method that is manifestation. We're protected. Our methods are protected. So that means if someone does not ever want to go back to church, ever, they are loving online. We see evangelical articles all the time talking about some church. Let's help you get your production studios going because people aren't just going to come back, which is totally true, which is why you and I have warned it. That means that, let's say Tim took the perspective of you can stay at home forever, and I took the perspective that the Bible teaches that we should be meeting as regular as often. We as theologians are able to lead our people, and we might disagree. We might disagree passionately. Tim and I might call each other names and get angry and have to apologize to each other later. But the burden, or not the burden of proof, the methodology of the manifestation is left within the religious community.
Right.
And the state only gets involved if there's criminal behavior. So, people, you cannot underestimate the amount of intrusion this decision has been made. Sorry, Tim.
And yeah, we are going to circle back to that just a little bit, because I do want to close with some of that methodology discussion. But just to wrap up this idea that the courts have become untrustworthy, and that's one of the things that we want you to see. This is not because I think these lawyers, these judges are horrible people. I don't think that they're unworthy of respect, but I think they're making a terrible error. They need to be called out. They need to be called back to what is true and what is good. And essentially what they have said is that you are free to hold your convictions in a jail cell. What does that sound like to you? You're welcome to hold your convictions from a jail cell. Friends, this is not the direction we want Canada to go. This is why we're opposing it. What this tells us is that the official narrative of the pandemic response, the lockdowns, the measures, the health unit, the official narrative is not only protected by the media. We've seen that. We've talked about censorship on this show before. How legitimate facts, and this is actually interesting because Facebook changed its policy not to remove articles. We talked about this last week, saying that the virus came out of the Wuhan lab, because a year ago that was a conspiracy theory, misinformation that had to be censored. So Facebook modifies its its protocols. Well, now that might be true, so we're not going to censor that. So the narrative is not only protected by the media. This is what is so dangerous. The narrative is now being protected by the courts.
And
that's what's dangerous here.
And we are really hoping that this judge might be just banking on the fact that the Supreme Court is going to rule the entire measures unconstitutional. But the reality of it is you're absolutely right, Tim. It is like a guy walking around with a sword and a shield. And on one hand, the sword is the health measures, basically telling everybody, do what we say, no matter what, whether your eyes see or your ears hear. And now there's a legal shield with the court coming along going, yeah, they don't have to prove their case. The burden of proof isn't on them. And you got to remember, this kind of crept in between, like maybe the government switched hands here, because a judge declaring over a pastor that the judge can define the methodology of worship, the manifestation of worship, in direct contravention to the right to manifest your convictions based upon scripture, is so dangerous. And again, I just want to repeat, there are limitations on rights. Tim and I have been abundantly clear about this. There's limitations to freedom of speech. There's limitations of freedom of worship. No one's allowed to go and offer child sacrifice in this country. If they tried to, we would all happily celebrate common men.
The government being involved.
And women and government to get involved. We would celebrate that. We are not talking about anything criminal. We are talking about the fact of just showing up. And at the same time, Tim, I know you've been doing some work on this. This is also in direct violation of Section 176, where the judge in this court case says Section 176 does not dig a moat around places of worship to prevent enforcing laws.
Absolutely. So taking it from here, this is our third point, is that laws that are put in the criminal code, and the criminal code is not easily amended. We are seeing bills right now to amend the criminal code in other perverted ways, but it's a large undertaking to modify, add to, or take away from the Canadian criminal code. It is the basis by which somebody spends their life in jail or not. It's a very serious agreement between law enforcement, elected officials, and the citizenry. Section 176 in the criminal code states that a pastor or a clergy person on their way to or during performance of or on their way from a religious activity cannot be impeded by law enforcement, either under the charge of violation of orders or under the pretense of being charged. So essentially, for a pastor, you can't do anything to a pastor on a Sunday. You have to arrest him on a Monday if he's a criminal. That's the bottom line there. That carries a 2-year prison sentence. Well, as we mentioned before, James Coates' church was barred around with 2 or 3 layers of 8-foot fencing. I would call that impeding a clergy person on his way to perform religious duties.
Yeah,
I said earlier on this show, if nobody goes to jail for that, then we have no law in Canada, because it's a criminal offense to do so. And he was put in jail for 35 days. That, by my count, is 4 or 5 Sundays that he was impeded from performing his religious duties. The bottom line here is that freedom of religion, which is in our charter, is no longer viewed as necessary or as structural to Canadian society. It's now seen sort of as a quaint tradition that we protect for sort of appearance sake, but essentially if it interferes with anything in the public eye, we can cast it aside like fifth period French.
We cast it aside, we can redefine it. And so, Tim, you have to understand, not only has he redefined the methodology, now he said the moat, by the way, we reconstruct the moat. Like, we put bridges where we want. When the situation you've described, again, is that within our criminal code, a religious worship service is a very sacred and very important practice, and it would not be impeded upon. That's what the law says. And it's for this very reason. It's for the very reason. I believe historically it had to do with protecting the Methodist church. We'd have to look at that a little bit. But just imagine a small community when that law is written. Pastor gets up on Sunday and says to a few of the police officers, and he talks about stealing. And the week before, five of those guys caught a gun ring, and there was some cash laying around, and four of them pocketed the money. Well, so they get their knickers in a knot, because they've been, you know, they're still kind of having a facade of morality around them. Maybe their family's going to church, or maybe they hear that the local pastor calls out thievery, and they just decide to quietly go, you know, on his way to church and say, "Hey, I don't like that." It is a protection from government officials. Or, you know, you and I have very strong views on sexuality, and I am ashamed that the pride flag is flying in New Tecumseh in this area. And if I go down to the OPP station and say, "Guys, take the pride flag down. It does not represent all of New Tech's views on sexuality. Please take it down." And then the police officers decide, you know what? We don't really, this pastor, man, he's getting in our face. He's pushing his weight around morally, because he has a moral conviction. Hey, you know what? Let's just make sure he's late for church on Sunday by pulling him over for a speeding ticket randomly. Or, you know, that's what the law is literally there for. Right. And what's going on? What's going on is that is being violated because a bunch of police officers either won't speak up and do the right thing, or because they actually believe that the health measures supersede our rights. Either way, they are violating it in the direct way that it was instituted to protect us. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So, and I had this engagement on Twitter the other day with somebody who literally said to me, "Just because he's a pastor doesn't mean he gets to violate health orders." Actually, in Canada, you do get to if you're a pastor. You know why? Because the criminal code says that you can't stop a pastor on his way to church. And the charter protects religious expression, which is not just conviction, it's manifestation. So guess what? If you are a pastor and the health unit says you cannot manifest your religion, the pastor can say, "Well, I suppose that I'm outside of that." And they actually do get to carry forward with their religious convictions. So the crazy thing here is that the judge is saying 176 does not dig a moat to protect an institution from the enforcement of laws. These health unit orders are not laws. They're not. They are not laws. The only reason these pastors are appearing before the courts is for contempt of court. So for a judge to say that this order supersedes law shows you how backwards and upside down COVID craze has made this country. We have abandoned laws in favor of bureaucratic health unit orders. The health ministers are not elected, and our elected officials are following them to the tune of suppressing the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the Canadian Criminal Code, which they swore an oath to protect. So friends, we're just trying to paint a picture of the gravity of how upside down things have become in Canada on the basis of this ruling.
I want to talk to you about one very specific thing. One of the men in my church very wisely said to our local police unit when I was charged, he said to the chief of police, "You know, I have worked very hard as a Christian man to set habits for my family. And one of those habits is the muscle memory of attending church, prioritizing worship of Jesus, prioritizing the singing to the Lord, prioritizing sitting under preaching." And for over a year now, your office, your OPP office has intruded, has interfered with my ability as a Christian man to set the traditions and memories and the manifestation. He didn't necessarily say that to me, but the manifestation of our Christian beliefs. And I want you to know that this is a really important point. Number one, there's a lot of you nominal Christians out there, and Tim and I are very sinful men. So just deal with it. We're sinners saved by grace. So will you be if you choose to follow Jesus? But nominal Christianity is defined by an intellectual acknowledgement that does not manifest, bear fruit, translate into real world action. And on this idea of muscle memory, you know, Tim, I know you were doing some research on this, that, you know, you and I both know that, you know, this whole secular, communistic, Marxist advance in our culture tries to help people forget their muscle memory, helps their cultural memory, and instead replaces that with their own sets of habits.
Yes.
So this is, folks, yeah, this is rudimentary discipleship. It's very important. And now you have the state literally redefining what the manifestation of our faith is and not requiring any government accountability. And we know historically that that is a part of a secular Marxist strategy. So we're also just, Tim, connect those thoughts for us.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a grander way.
This is my last point, and I know we've gone on about this, and some of you are trying to find the common threads here, and this is so much about Christianity. As a concerned Canadian, how does this affect me? We have, and this is my last point, and we're going to wrap up in a few minutes, is that overreaching government, which is pushing toward this totalitarian, Marxist, tyrannical type control, overreaching government has come to define and manage things to the point of suffocation. And I use that word suffocation very carefully because it literally is the suffocation. It is the snuffing out of everything that does not conform with their practices, their standards, their orders, their morals. Everything has to come under the definition of. This is why laws on hate speech, or laws on, you know, sexual censorship, or laws against teaching or disseminating religion are so dangerous because they sanitize and destroy cultural expression and cultural memory. And I'm just going to quote from this book again by Rod Dreher, Live Not by Lies, that I'm reading through right now. I found something so powerful the other night. One of the key strategies, communistic advantage, actually to create people from collective or cultural memory, like you were talking about, Mike, that muscle memory of attending church, worshiping in person, singing songs, laying hands on each other, all the things that make the Christian faith what it is, to separate people from those cultural memories. Rod says, truths carried by tradition must be lived out subjectively. That's manifested what we're talking about. That is, they must not only be studied, but embodied in shared social practices. So eating, we have in the Christian church, the Lord's Supper. It's a communal event. That is, they must not only be studied, but embodied in shared social practices. Words, yes, but importantly, deeds. Communities must have living models of men and women who enact truth in their daily lives. Nothing else works. End quote. So the point is there, if you sacrifice every manifestation of your way of life for the so-called greater good, you are adopting the religious practices and viewpoints of the government and the civic authorities. You are absorbing a different religion when you give up and separate yourself from all of your cultural practices.
I think we should just end there. Like, wow. Good analysis, Tim. you know, I don't like to give you compliments often, especially, you know, concerning your lighting and your insights and your thoughts, but it's like, I think that hits the nail on the head with what we've been concerned about for so long. Yeah. We are now seeing, let's just go all the way through. So we are now seeing health units saying this is what health looks like and no one can question it. We now have courts saying, actually, your religious freedoms are defined by me. I'm a judge and I'm going to change your manifestation and your methodology as I reasonably see fit. And then what you've just drawn out and what is, I think, actually what got you and I passionate about this from day one is that people, citizens of Canada, Christians, your practices now are creating habits and you are infusing, you are syncretizing, you are changing the historical practicing of faith, of Christianity. Actually, this is really what I've been so, I went with a friend of mine this week and he said, Mike, I'm getting really sick and tired of this whole, if you don't open your churches, you're not a Christian. Or if you don't open your churches, you're not a courageous Canadian. And I think maybe that's why there's so much tension here. Because on one hand, we're not saying to our brothers and sisters, hey, if you're not concerned and then publicly doing something about it, you're not a Christian. We're not saying that. But we are also saying pretty sincerely, hey, by the way, if your kids haven't learned how to go to church for a year and a half, and your pastor is telling you to do that, and your pastor's more concerned about you wearing masks than about you following the commands of scripture, though, that's an infusion of different dogmas that potentially can lead to false religion.
Let me put it a little bit more basically. If this week your thought is, I'd like to have that family over for dinner, and if your first thought is to open up the Ontario Public Health page and to find out whether it's permitted, you are embodying the practices of a different religion, of a different nation. If your first thought, if you're a pastor, is for church this Sunday, I have to check the updates. I think this Friday they're going to advance to some new level in Ontario. If your thought for how to run church this Sunday, if your first thought is to open up the Ontario regulations page, you have begun to enact and manifest and embody a different religious viewpoint.
That's really helpful.
That's as simply as I can say that. And that's why we're trying to pull people back to, no, let's not live that way. We can't live that way.
And that's literally what the judge did himself. Just looked at it and said, I think your methodology can adapt. I think I've got no problem, whatever your convictions are. So Tim, I think the great wind up, good discussion today, folks. We needed to return to this because I think that we've been talking about a lot of different issues, but this was the issue and it's very contemporary this week. It's very important for this week's news. So we don't typically focus on one issue. We don't stay on it, but we wanted to return here. Pastor James, all of the pastors who are staying open to the best of their ability, who are trying to be faithful to their convictions, we are with you and we want to support you. We are praying for you. And folks, if you've been an opponent and you're just listening along, please hear that last point with clarity. Your practices, your habits, in turn, shape your manifestation of the kingdom of God. Your habits, in turn, shape how you manifest your Canadian rights. And, you know, if you've got a friend who hasn't figured this out, please share the podcast with them. Share this episode, because I think Tim started us down a road here where we were able to really express our concern in an important way. So look, thanks for listening. Folks, we are not trying to exclude content, which means if you go to Rebel News or you go to other news sites, At this point, you can go and you can only see certain articles. We're trying to allow all of our information to get out far and wide. And that's why we've gone the non-for-profit and then we're applying for charitable status. So would you please support, contribute, invest, stakehold in our broadcasting across enemy lines, as Tim says every week. Thanks for being with us. We pray that we will eventually be able to restore and maintain liberty in Canada as we all start to manifest our consciences with more clarity.
Thanks for joining us on Liberty Dispatch. Join us next week.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, working together for liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.